Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
A BetterHelp ad. Lewis Capaldi partnered with BetterHelp to get word out about how important therapy can be.
And I struggle most weeks to like get up, get myself up and ready and go to therapy or, you know, whatever. Like even like to open the laptop to talk to my therapist sometimes can be really difficult. But I do it because I realise how important it is for me to continue to feel good. Like, 'cause I felt the best I've felt in a long time through therapy.
Learn more about online therapy at betterhelp.com.
Welcome back to Grassroots Bargaining on CannabisRio.com. And bringing on a return guest, it's been a little bit since we had him on with us, but we talked with him back during the holidays. He is a strategist and helps managing industry research, mergers, acquisitions, and strategic partnerships for the company of LeafLink. Been a featured industry expert on both ABC, Fox, NPR, and other through digital channels like Forbes, Cannabis Business Times, MJ Business Daily, and St. Louis Business Journal, among others. Previously worked at City Equity Research and Tuatara Capital, and graduated from the Wharton School at University of Pennsylvania. Welcoming back to the program, the strategist at LeafLink, Ben Burstein. Ben, thanks for being back on with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I respect so much what you do for our industry. So really, it's just such a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. So I know last time we talked about the creation of the Holiday of Sales Guide, and we went through quite a bit there on that program. And we're back to another holiday again because 420 is coming upon us. I'm recording this on the 1st of April. So you make the point that in this report that 420 sales aren't just a one-day boom. It's what sets the standard for the rest of the year, and that the dispensary purchases you've noticed, according to LeafLink's data, is that in each of the last 3 years leading up to 420, they set new heights for the market, and while the market comes down from those heights, it almost never falls below where sales were in February, setting the market on a steady climb upward. Now, are you talking about this from a store-to-store basis or because of the fact that the growth of the industry is also because of the access to cannabis growing in different states and different new markets every month, or every year, actually, for that matter?
420 is the most important holiday for operators across the supply chain. If you are a retailer, you'll typically sell 2 to 2.5 weeks of total sales, and you're like 1 week around the holiday. If you're a brand, in the month leading up to 420, you'll typically do 10 to 15% of your total sales. When we think about 420 and the impacts on like a market-by-market basis and how you think about it as a company, is really one where if you do 420 correctly, you're going to be profitable. If you don't do 420, it's very difficult to make the year work. When we think about sales over the year, you typically have lower sales at the beginning of your year in January and February. That's primarily driven by lower pricing with all of your outdoor harvests at the end of the third quarter, beginning of the fourth quarter. That product then goes throughout the system to all of your retailers over the next few months. Pricing typically falls, which is why sales also accompany it down. And then 420 is really your time in a holiday to get rid of all of your additional inventory typically held in flower, or put new promotional activity out on inventory that you have that you're looking to sell through. Or you have the opportunity to like really categorize what form factors you have with the customers that you're looking to target and best use your inventory in that way. Stores typically have to stock 2.5 to 3 times the amount of inventory they typically would the week of 420 because of all the promotions, foot traffic, and discounts that they're encouraging. So when we think about the long-term trajectory for a company in the year, 420 is pretty early in the year, but it's also when you start to see pricing increase through the summer because you're now 6+ months away from your harvest. If you're a company, you've typically executed your marketing strategy around 420. So if you've executed successfully, you'll see higher sales long term. If you don't, it's going to be pretty challenging to continue growing through the year. So while total sales in the country continue going up after 420, that's primarily a function of pricing improving, some decreases in discounting, and most obsolete inventory has already been sold through. So just total retail pricing is much higher.
So there's a stat that was brought into us when we were getting prepared for the program. 3-year stats of the 420 sales boost of the cannabis market to new levels. And so going back to January 2021, when you would see sales probably getting a little bit over $350 million in total, now reaching more towards the breaking the $400 million mark, working the way to half a billion. The one thing is that, is as you said, there is that constant spike. What can you tell me is that, because, and I didn't know if this was already put in there before, but what you'll show is that you'll show wholesale changes jumping from March to April, 42% 2021, 33% 2022, 26% 2023. So there's always that significant spike that comes up between March and April. So we get to that part. And then what is it do you feel like has been, besides the sales holiday, do you feel like what kind of sales are you seeing right now from all these dispensaries in order to be able to go and get that boost that they're trying to go and get? In terms of, I know that for 420, there's a lot of inventory that's already backlogged from the holidays from before. I think you were talking about that as well, that in the holidays, there's so much product being produced that if there's anything left over from the holidays that has not been pushed off the shelf, 420 is that time to clear it out. So is that where you feel like that kind of aspect is why that happens? Because, you know, first quarter of the month, we need to get whatever else we had from 2023 off the shelves. I mean, what kind of a deep discount can we do?
No, you're spot on, right? And a lot of it depends on market dynamics in some of your more legacy markets where you have very oversupplied conditions. You have a lot of cultivators. There's a lot of flower inventory after your outdoor harvest at the end of 23. There's going to be very aggressive discounting. Like typical MSRPs are 20 to 30% lower in your legacy markets around 420 than they are the rest of the year. That's primarily driven by aggressive discounting activity. In some of your newer markets where you have improved supply and demand dynamics, like New Jersey, that's going to have robust 420 sales for the first time. A state like New York that now has almost 100 dispensaries open. A state like Maryland that's going to have its first 420 as a legal market. These states don't have like the oversupply dynamics where retailers are really looking to sell through inventory much faster than they have been. So your discounting is going to be less in those newer states. So when we think about long term, it's 420 is your opportunity to get rid of as much flower and flower type products as you can. Like that's what the holiday is made of. That's where the discounting is primarily happening and where most retailers are focusing their attention. In the states where you don't have flower oversupply conditions, you don't really have an incentive to sell through product as quickly as you can. So while in every single state, foot traffic is going to be up tremendously around the 420 holiday, the degree to which discounting and pricing changes is mostly on like a state-by-state basis instead of just an overall national average. But every dispensary is going to offer some type of rewards or promotional strategy in order to increase basket sizes, get more loyalty among their customers, and ultimately drive more business after the holiday period.
But, you know, if you wanted to go ahead and grow more sales, there's also the part where every market still has to deal with the illicit market. The cut that is always taken away from all those sales. When you look at the study from there, what can you tell me about the percentage or the ratio of illicit market sales versus those legal sales and how much that cuts away into the sales spikes that do come from 420?
Yeah, it's a great question. Look, as everyone recognizes today, the illicit market is multiples larger than your legal market. You have around $30 billion in legal sales. Most analysts and pundits would estimate you have $50 to $70 billion of illicit sales. So you have an illicit market that's roughly double the size of your legal market. Your degree to which the illicit market is popular in a state is very much on a state-by-state basis. So I'll give you two comparisons that we can think of. One would be Colorado, which is your oldest legal market, has been a legal market for more than 10 years, and actually has a very small illicit market. There just isn't much illicit market activity in a state like Colorado. Conversely, you have a state like California that has also had the longest medical program of any state since 96, with legal sales that have been going for 5+ years now. In California, more than 2/3, even 3/4 of total sales are illicit in the state. Those dynamics are primarily driven by two reasons. Number one is retail accessibility and the proximity to the average consumer in a state. If you're looking to buy beer or tobacco or really any other vice, that's legal today, you'll probably do it at the consumption point closest to you. So if you want to buy a beer and you have a convenience store next door to where you live, you'll probably go there. As you get further out and you have to travel further distances, you're less likely to go and buy that product. So when you think about dispensaries and the proximity to consumers, if a consumer like me has a dispensary pretty close to them, I'm probably pretty likely to buy from the legal market. If I don't have a dispensary anywhere close to me, I'm probably going to buy from the illicit market. So in a state like Colorado, where you have very few municipalities actually banning cannabis, you have stores across the state, you have very good store density. There's not much reason for people to buy illicitly. Like, they just have a store in their backyard. Prices are pretty good. They're willing to go buy from the legal market. California, for instance, has the two-tier approval. So you have more than two-thirds of municipalities in California not allowing legal sales. So when you don't have a dispensary 150 miles from you, you're very likely to purchase illicitly. So when we think about states across the country, the number one predictor of illicit market activity is your store density. Like, how much access do consumers have to legal market sales? If there is good access, they'll probably buy from a legal store. If there's not, they're probably going to buy illicitly. The second key dynamic is price. When prices are really high, consumers tend to buy prices like illicit products that have lower prices. When prices are very low in markets like a Colorado or an Oregon or Oklahoma, they're very unlikely to buy from the illicit market just because pricing is pretty similar. So overall, illicit market activity is primarily driven on a state-by-state level. When you have 420 deals that lower prices a lot in illicit markets, or in legal markets, you're definitely pulling some volume away from the illicit market. But I'd say it has a lot more to do with like where you live and where the stores are than necessarily pricing and like an overall illicit market nationally.
So what Colorado has done to help curb the illicit market is the proximity of how many dispensaries are out there. According to Dispense, which has been acquired by Alpine IQ, they make the point that there are roughly over 1,000 dispensaries in Colorado. In California, there's 1,200. But when you look at the landmass and how much needs to be covered, California only has 1,244. And again, the size of the illicit market, they don't need a little more in-depth research about that aspect of the fact that, you know, how many, you know, in terms of sales, how much does the legal market cover ground to meet the consumer needs as opposed to what the illicit market is able to go ahead and take away from, which takes away from the sales?
Yeah, this is a great aligned question. I think we can keep thinking through this, like California versus Colorado example. California, you have over 1,000 stores, but when you actually look at the locations of those stores, almost all of them are located in very concentrated large cities. So like downtown LA has over 150 stores within a few mile radius. You have in downtown San Francisco, in downtown Sacramento, and most of the big cities in California is where your stores are very densely located. So while you may have 150 stores in downtown LA, almost all of them essentially serve the same customer base. The challenge that you get is when you go to cities that don't have robust cannabis programs, like a San Diego, for example, where there's two legal stores across the entire city, there's just not much room for legal consumers to enter those legal stores. So if you're a heavy cannabis consumer, you've been consuming your entire life and you don't have a legal store next to you, you're a very high propensity to consume illicitly. Like, there's just not a robust amount of coverage of dispensaries in a lot of states today. It's mainly driven by municipalities not allowing for these cannabis businesses. In some of your other states where you have allowed for very diverse density of your stores, like another state we can think of is New Mexico. New Mexico does not allow municipalities to ban cannabis businesses. So every single city is required to allow dispensaries within their city limits. And what's happened is that the illicit market has essentially fallen to zero in New Mexico. Like, prices are pretty good. You have stores everywhere and people are very happy to go and purchase from their legal stores with essentially the same pricing as they would from the illicit market. So as we think about like how the US in general can curb illicit market activity, like the main way to do it is by increasing retail accessibility. Like, how do you make legal products accessible to everyone? And this is a long-term problem. Like, it took 20 years post-prohibition for people to stop drinking bathtub gin. I think it's like akin to the same process in the cannabis industry today. We've had 10 years of legal sales starting with Colorado in 2014. It's going to be another 10 plus years until you really have the same level of accessibility as you do in like alcohol or tobacco. And you're starting to see now in states like Minnesota, where you're allowed to have THC derived beverages at anywhere that you'd sell liquor, in your grocery stores, in bars, you can now potentially have it on tap. Like, these are the ways that you increase accessibility to the point where brands really matter. People care a lot about buying from the legal market, and like, they don't want to buy illicit product that they don't know where it came from. But until you have that development, it's very unlikely to get much progress from like individual policy
movements. I want to pack a few things in there. So when it comes down to Colorado, that they have reached a particular quota of dispensaries that, and a lot of locations feel to reach that market. So to be able to get enough to cover so that, you know, people are not going to have to go looking around for someone illicitly, that there's more than enough legal markets. And do you feel like there's enough of those to make the price point come down because of the magnitude of stores that are out there?
No, that's right. So the average price of a store in like downtown Denver, where you have your highest concentration in Colorado, is much higher than where you're going to have prices in like tourist locations or ski mountains or places where you don't have as much density. Like, if you're a dispensary in Aspen, Colorado, where you have two stores, it's much easier to compete with higher prices than it is to be in Denver, where you have 100 plus stores within a few mile radius. So like in a Denver, you have to compete on price because your heavy consumers will just go where prices are lowest. But in a city like Aspen, where you don't really have much competition and there's very few dispensaries, it's much easier to keep pricing high and win on better margins.
Now, you also...
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8-6-25 and 1-5-26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
In Minnesota, when it comes to beverages. But now Minnesota just turned legal this year for adult use. They're anticipating to try to get 400 licensed dispensaries open adult use eventually by 2025. The thing is that enough to honestly cover based on the stats you see? Would that be enough to go and cover ground in that state? Or would, when you see, like, what's the amount of dispensaries that a state should have to cover enough square, or I mean, just how many square miles of an area to make it accessible and available to have enough dispensaries so that the price point does come down? I mean,
yeah,
Minnesota, is 400 a feasible number? Does it need to be a lot more?
Yeah, this is a great question. Minnesota is one of the most interesting markets in the entire country today, where hemp-derived THC is allowed in beverages, and those beverages are allowed to be sold essentially everywhere. So, for instance, Total Wine and Spirits, if you walk in, have a very large display of hemp-derived THC beverages. And Total Wine reports that more than 10% of their sales in Minnesota have come from these hemp-derived THC beverages. Most pundits today estimate that the run rate sales for hemp-derived beverages in Minnesota is like $300 to $400 million. That would be one of the largest markets in the country for a general legalized product. So you have these two competing markets, one where you have hemp-derived THC that can be sold essentially anywhere in Minnesota, and you have a legal market where today there's two big multi-state operators, Green Thumb and Goodness Growth, who have like vertical licenses, and then the state is going to be issuing hundreds, if not thousands, of licenses across the supply chain over the next year and a half. What we've seen from most consumers is they don't actually know the difference between hemp-derived THC beverage and like a product from the traditional legal cannabis market. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how those two markets compete with one another. Most people today walk into a grocery store, they see a THC beverage that gets them high, And it doesn't look any different than like legal products and legal markets anywhere else in the country. And because of that, you just had this huge growth in accessibility. And I think it gives you some more support for the idea that as accessibility increases across the rest of the country, like you have 11,000 dispensaries today, you have 2.3 million locations that sell alcohol. Once you get cannabis distribution higher, your sales, your total consumer interest, consumer adoption are all going to increase in turn as well. So in Minnesota, for example, your legal consumption is really high. Like there's been very strong adoption of the legal hemp-derived THC market. It'll be interesting to see if that translates over to like the traditional legal market when they release a lot of stores. I think 400 to 500 stores makes a lot of sense. It all depends on the density of those stores. Like where are you placing them? Are they all going to be in Minneapolis in the Twin Cities area? Or are they going to be throughout the state? Are you going to have accessibility for people in rural areas? And are you going to make like medical patients have true accessibility to medical like products? And those
part of it, I know that as well as that the tribes, the indigenous tribes in Minnesota, depending on how far spread they are around, they are immediately able to go and open adult use dispensaries and they've already started. And for them, I know that in Minnesota, we've talked to a number of people in our blunt business program about the plan to go ahead and have where they definitely don't want to concentrate on highly populated areas. They definitely want to go ahead and make sure that the rural markets are serviced well by having dispensaries available pretty clear close to them as well, as for, you know, up north. And because they also got to figure out that they don't want to have any kind of issue where, you know, people from Canada can cross the border and they can go ahead and Minnesota can go pick, cross the border to Canada and then bring back. They want to be able to cover the whole area. But now I want to stick on this point here. The ratio when it comes to how many dispensaries are out there versus, you know, population to service the population. Because for California, again, making my point clear, over 1,200 as of January 2024, but that's servicing 38 million people. For Colorado, over 1,000 dispensaries for a population of just under 6 million. But then it, obviously, one of the weirdest things too is that Oklahoma, of all places, 4 million residents, and they have more than twice of California, 2,387 dispensaries. So do you also notice the fact of how more ruralized states have many more dispensaries to cover their market and their illicit market? I mean, does Oklahoma have quite a low illicit market as well like Colorado? Because we're seeing that must be a trend right there between highly populated and rurally populated.
Yeah, I would dissect what we're talking through into two different questions, right? Like one part of it is how robust of an upstream supply chain exists in that state, like how much cultivation capacity is there? And then your second is like retail accessibility and your retail demand. In most of your very oversupplied states today, like what we just talked about with large retail license counts, you typically have accompanying very large upstream license counts. So you have a lot of cultivators, a lot of processing licenses. So like in just in California and Oklahoma alone, in Oklahoma, you have 8,000 cultivation and processing licenses. In California, you have over 3,000 cultivation and processing licenses. In the entire U.S., you have about 20,000 cultivation and processing licenses. So that means that more than half of all cultivators in the country are located in California and Oklahoma. Both of those markets are extremely oversupplied today. What that is in turn done is caused for very robust illicit market activity. Like if you're a legal operator and there's so much oversupply that not a single one of the retail stores are buying from you, like you basically have to make a decision whether you're going to sell product illicitly and put food on the table for your family, or if you're going to go out of business. And a lot of operators have made the choice to support their families and however they can, which I don't blame them for. I think where the complications arise is how do you then take your total retail demand in a state, so like the different accessibility levels that you have to your dispensaries, the total number of dispensaries, and adequately match those to your upstream supply. So clearly there's a dynamic where in California, Oklahoma, basically any of your legacy markets, there's not enough retail demand to really meet your total upstream capacity. So you have a big glut of total cannabis products, and that product goes to the illicit market typically. If you get more retail accessibility, like you have more stores relative to your amount of cultivation capacity, your illicit market activity is likely going to go down because your retailers will then purchase product from the brands legally. If the brands are selling all of their product to the retailers legally, there's no product to be sold into the illicit market. So when I think about, like, how do you combat the illicit market and how do you enable retailers in states with large retail accounts to fight back against the illicit market, I really think it's balancing your upstream cultivation and processing supply with your downstream retail demand. And downstream retail demand increases by having stores that are evenly distributed across a lot of consumers and really maximize the amount of adoption possible.
Yeah, there's got to be a good balance. Because in Oklahoma, if you're reading about them, you know, they have still a good 5,000, they say this, from different illicit market, you know, outfits out there. And maybe about a quarter of those have been cracked down by the Bureau of Narcotics. So they're trying to get to that. But there's also been talking about, when it comes to the medical market, there's an oversupply of what's being grown out there because the cultivation is so cheap to go and do. And, you know, people can grow it so quickly and so, and by yield so much. I guess that's just how the environment works for that. So yeah, there's not a perfect answer for it, obviously. But I think that's something to be said, where the numbers do tell the details about, you got to have more than enough dispensaries to cover a particular ground and market that will help, you know, where Colorado is, again, the role model, but it took 10 years to get there, for them to get to a particular amount of dispensaries, enough licenses going out there, and people will just realize, you know what, we don't need to go and go listen anymore. We're getting convenience right now. We can buy wherever we want. We can buy as much product as we want because there's no limitations. So with that, it makes it much easier. California hasn't figured it out, but you want to be able to see if one of the bigger states, like in New York, obviously New York has struggled a lot with this right now, about a year, you know, what, 6 months into a, no, more than that, year and a half into this whole setup, roughly 100 dispensaries open. And, you know, I don't want to get into the social media, the social equity aspect of it either, which is another story of that, but we're going to table that for another time. But I think this discussion right here of just the kind of ratio of what you need to go and cover a market to curb the illicit market, it's very important that people need to go and really look at those details of that, because besides the fact of the sales and how 420, getting back to our initial point, 420 is a spike in sales, and that becomes the barrier that most companies will not drop below once they reach that particular growth of sales. They can sustain at least that going into the next 420 season, which is what is a very important trend that you're pointing out, Ben. And I really appreciate you taking time out and going to tell us about this. Thought this was really important to go and get this conversation about it. And for those that want to go and learn more about the report here and what you're learning in general, can you go and tell people just really what they should go and do so they can go and learn more about this recent report and new data and how they can go work with LinkLink to be able to go and get to be a part of that and also be part of those great numbers?
Thanks, Brasco. LeafLink is the commerce platform for the industry. More than half of all products sold at dispensaries are sourced on our website, leaflink.com. If you're a cannabis operator, whether you're an upstream producer, brand, or supplier, or you're a downstream retailer, non-storefront delivery operator, or anyone that's in the cannabis business, LeafLink is able to support you in doing your business. We will help you manage your orders, facilitate those orders, pay for those orders, and transport those orders. And ultimately, our job is to be the best partner in the industry for you. Everyone at LeafLink loves this company. We love this industry, and we feel extremely well positioned to enable companies across the spectrum to really make the most of their businesses today. If there's anything that you're going to take away from this conversation on 420 with action items to pursue as a retailer or a brand, would be these three items. Number one, optimize your inventory levels. You're going to sell through 2 to 3 times the amount of inventory around 420 than you traditionally would. The worst decision you can make is to stock out on product, because then your total sales will be zero. Second, make sure you find the right product assortment. 420 is the flower holiday. More than half of all sales are flower products, and almost every single basket is going to have some type of flower or packaged flower item in it. Make sure that you're stocking flower on your shelves. The sales of packaged flower on LeafLink increased by more than 50% in the month leading up to 420. It's the most important product to have. And lastly, it's about fine-tuning your promotional activities. You want to encourage discounts and rewards and opportunities for your consumers to come in and increase their basket sizes and their velocity long-term. But if you do it correctly, You increase your basket sizes while maintaining your margins. If you do it incorrectly, like aggressive discounting, like we've seen across most challenged markets over the last couple of years, you're probably going to lose money on the holiday, making it very difficult to be profitable over the rest of the year. So if you fine-tune your promotional activities and really think through what your strategy is going to be to increase your basket sizes with your consumers, you can make this holiday not only one of the most profitable weeks for your dispensary, but one where you're getting the most tailwinds for the rest of the year.
Fantastic. So again, leaflink.com, leaflink.com. And, you know, if you haven't gone to take a look at the website and about the software in terms of what working in over 30 markets and a lot of brands that are working with as well, software ecosystem for wholesale cannabis commerce. Plus also on the top of the website, you have a new report, the Cannabis Financial Report, High Stakes, uncovering insights from industry professionals. You can download that as well. So there's a lot of things to go to the website. Again, I'm here with market analyst with LeafLink, Ben Burstein. Ben, thanks again, as always, for being on.
Roscoe, thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.